You're listening to the Courageous Life Podcast, helping you develop courage and resilience in a perilous and unpredictable world. This is your host, Sean Mitzel. I'm coming to you from the mountains of northern Idaho. I'm glad you're with us.
On today's podcast, Monica and I discuss adoption in the worldview segment. This is part number six. And for the main topic, we're discussing setting goals. And I use an example from our some of our major goals, one in particular, and then follow it all the way through to an action plan that impacts day-to-day tasks. On today's worldview segment, Monica and I continue to discuss adoption. This is actually part six in our final podcast on adoption. Up to this point, we've talked about everything from the process to how the parameters of children, picking an agency, the finances, the digging into your personal life, all the way through to picking up the children. And this final podcast is about integrating children into the family and some of the challenges that are involved in doing that, some of the ways that we are trying to do that. And really, all the aspects that go into integration into the family and some of the differences between younger children and older children.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So when we start, why don't we start with our son, our young son, 3 years old, just turned three, and how that was as far as integration into the family.
Well, when he came to us, he was 20 months, and so, but because he has Down syndrome, he was probably more about the level of a 6 to 9 month old, wasn't crawling or anything like that yet. And so for me, especially, even though it was a lot more work, it was a bit of a culture shock, I think, for both of us and even for the girls in Austin to go, to realize, wow, we have to wake up in the middle of the night to crying. We have to change diapers again and pack the food for when we leave the house. And
yeah, it had been a long
formula.
Time since we had a young one in the house.
Yeah, and I hadn't ever used formula, so that was a little bit of an adjustment for me. But, it was practical day-to-day life changed quite a bit because now we suddenly had a little guy. But as far as bonding, it happened fairly quickly. And within 3 months or so, it really felt like he was our son.
Right.
He just felt naturally mine. And like I had given birth to him or something.
Right.
And he really became our child.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess the point there is it was fairly easy, although it was still a shocking adjustment.
Yeah.
But the integration of the family is easy, so we just treat them like...
Yeah,
he was our son.
And it felt that way.
Right.
You know, and because you say that, I mean, no matter how old they are, you say that, you're my son, you're my daughter. But sometimes, you know, the bond doesn't happen as quickly
right.
with the older children.
Right, and people are different. And,
yes.
And so how you know, parents approach adoption, we're human.
Yes.
So, you know, we don't immediately have unconditional love towards children.
Right, of course. I mean, we try and treat them the same. And even if we don't necessarily feel always the same, we make sure that we're not presenting that to
yeah.
them.
Right.
But, you know, it's mutual, though. For them, they call us mom and dad. But, you know, as older children, they have lived with their birth mother. They had their birth father there. So... you know, even though it's been years since they've been with them, it's still calling us mom and dad doesn't necessarily make them feel like we're their mom
sure,
and dad.
Sure, yeah. And so obviously we've transitioned into talking about
older children.
Which is much more challenging.
It is.
I mean, it's just being honest, not to discourage anyone from adopting older children, but it is. It has special challenges.
Yes. And, you know, when we got them... they were 11, 14, and 15,
yeah.
right? Yes. Or were they 10, 14, and 15?
Oh, 10. 10, 14, 10, 15.
Because they, everyone... So
they turned
both
11 the next month.
Right, the two younger ones had birthdays. And so, yeah, I guess I think of them as 11, 14, and 15, but it was really 10, 13, and 15.
Yeah.
But it happened the next month that they had birthdays. So, so the 11-year-old, sweet, funny, unique girl that she is, has adjusted much quicker and bonded right. much quicker.
Even though for the first several months, she was the one where we thought would be the most difficult because she had a very hard exterior.
She did.
She was defensive
yeah.
and not willing to crack.
Yeah. I mean, you could tell that she was one of those children that had really put up
a wall
of protection around herself, and she was afraid to be vulnerable and afraid to love somebody.
Right.
And she didn't pretend. I mean, there was no pretending with her. With the other two, there was a lot more I love yous and things where with her, she was very guarded with that.
Right.
I mean, we were lucky to get a hug.
You get the sideways hug at an angle.
Angle. Yeah. And maybe a muttered I love you, but generally not.
Right.
Generally not. I mean, she just didn't say it. She does now, and it means a lot more because we know that she trusts us, and she really has integrated and bonded and truly become part of the family.
Right. Now, and even so, and it took many months.
Many. Yeah. I would say that probably where the true bonding and the final integration happened was probably within the last 2 or 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
I mean, you're taking almost a year.
Almost a year.
Almost a year.
Yeah.
And then the older kids, we're still working on that.
We are.
Let's just be honest about
yeah.
it. It's hard.
It is. It's much harder. They've lived much longer with not only their birth parents, but also
in an orphanage.
In an orphanage on the streets, and have gotten a lot of habits that
yeah. I mean survival habits.
Yes.
You know.
Lying and cheating and things like that. It makes it a lot harder to spend time bonding when you're spending so much time trying to do moral and character correction.
Yeah.
Because you want to have positive interactions, but it's really hard when there's not a trust bond between you. And we do notice, though, when we spend more time with them and they know that we're there and we're watching and stuff, that they will make more efforts. And so,
yeah.
You know, I think that's one of the things that we've worked on is trying to find opportunities to work side by side. Like you
yeah.
take the kids out when you're thinning out the trees in our
pasture. And the forest.
Right, and work with them.
Yeah.
You've taken Joseph out hunting a couple times with you, and he helped you find and cut down the Christmas tree.
Yeah, absolutely. So that, I mean, those are some concrete ways to try and integrate. I mean, it's really just doing those family things.
Yeah.
And making them an integral part of the family. Not just, you know, they're doing their chores or taking out the garbage. It's like they're contributing
right.
significantly to the family. That's the goal.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the goal.
Well, yeah. And I would say, like, especially with Joseph right now, you know, he brings in the firewood and it really helps keep our house warm.
Yeah.
And our family comfortable.
Yeah.
So it's an important piece.
Right.
And I know he knows that.
Yeah. I mean, we explained to them, hey, by doing this, by being diligent and keeping the wood stock, something that, you know, seemingly simple, you're actually contributing to keeping the family warm.
Yeah.
That's important.
It
I
is
mean,
important.
We primarily heat with wood.
Wood, yeah.
And, yeah.
Yeah. And then, important. You know, we do movie nights and you do family devotions and that again is creating those family moments. We have dinner together every night and usually other meals together as well, but at least dinner for sure. We sit down in the dining room together. And
right. We make an effort to do that.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing anyway. But
yeah.
It's especially important when you're trying to integrate adopted children.
Right. But it is definitely a whole lot more challenging the older they get.
It is.
We notice that, you know, with Hero being so quick. And like I said, the adjustment to taking care of a baby again was
shocking.
Huge.
Yeah.
But But other than that, it wasn't difficult for me even to bond with him, partly because he was so young and so helpless, and and he really was 100% dependent on me.
Right. There's also the there's language barrier. I mean, obviously, we're talking about international adoption. It's not a barrier, but
it's a little stunted.
Yeah.
You can't have just smooth conversation because they don't understand a lot of nuances of our language.
Right.
There's things that we say that we can tell they're not understanding what we're saying. There's this puzzled look on their face like, what did you just say?
Right. So you got to make allowances for the language.
Yeah.
I guess the nuances, like you said.
Yeah. There's things that we just take for granted in English that we say, and they look at us with puzzled looks and blank stares. Like, okay, they didn't get that. Let's rephrase. Let's break it down Barney style, because, you know, we're talking above their understanding.
Right. And probably another important point of adopting, any international adoption is just about, is they're probably going to be behind academically. Just from simply being, not being in school.
Right. Yeah. Because our kids, you know, they didn't really consistently attend a school, and even the same school, for quite a while, especially the older two.
Yeah.
And really, when they hit the orphanage, was the first time that they went to school every day consistently for those 3 years. So even though they learned at a quicker rate than the youngest, they are still quite far behind. And so, you know, homeschooling is great for that. You don't have to go, well, I'm sorry, you're going to have to go in with the sixth graders and you're, you know, 15.
Right.
No, it doesn't matter. At home, we can just work with you where you're at. You can work at your pace. And hopefully, if you school year-round, which is what we do, he'll eventually catch up, or she'll eventually catch up.
Right.
At least vaguely, you know, to where they need to be. And you can tailor the information and the education.
Frankly, the academics is not the goal.
No, anyway. It's not. Really, our goal with our children, with all of them, is to make them equipped for life, to be able to get married or have jobs or go to college and be successful in everything they do. And the second thing is to always teach them that education is a life skill. This isn't something, education isn't K-12.
It stops when I...
Yeah, or even college, you know, we're done now. But education is a self-education. You learn. And if we can get them a love for learning, they'll never be anything they can't learn on their
own. Absolutely. On today's podcast, I want to talk to you about setting goals. And I'm going to use a specific example of a goal that we set here on our farm. But before we get into that, I want to talk to you about why you should set goals. The fact of the matter is that only 3% of adults actually set goals. They actually have written goals that they work off, that they've set, you know, intermediate goals to try and get to. And the reality is that those people who do set goals, who have written goals that are actively working towards, are way more productive than the rest of us, regardless of our busyness. Somebody can be really busy, but have no focus and no clear direction, and therefore they're not all that successful. Another way to put this is that in this particular study, it says 3% of people are successful, 30% are moderately successful, and 67% just exist. Now, we'd have to sit down and define success. And that's not the point of today. What I want to talk to you about is setting goals. And then, you know, you need to determine success. And we will talk about that to a degree on when you have a goal, you have to define what success. What does it mean to meet that goal? What does that look like? And so that becomes very important. But before we get into that, I want you to think about these questions that have to do with habit building. So just give yourself an honest assessment. Do you have a clear sense of purpose or direction for your life? Are you willing to do whatever it takes rather than looking for something for nothing? Do you practice good habits which contribute to good health? So good diet, exercise, etc. Do you tackle tasks immediately, or are you a procrastinator? Can you persist in the face of difficulty? Okay, because most people flat out give up. As soon as it gets hard, they stop, they quit. Are you willing to aim high? Are you willing to step out on a limb and set those high standards, those high goals? Do you seek out and surround yourself with people who encourage and coach you to great success? You got to be very careful about hanging around people who basically are naysayers, or every time you bring up an idea, they'll scoff at it, etc. And are you willing to learn, read, and acquire the knowledge and skills to make you a generalist? Now, I think everybody should be primarily a generalist, but then specialize in one or two areas. But if I was to pick one, I would say that you need to be a generalist. And are you enthusiastic, committed, and motivated? Because here's the reality. Most people fail at setting goals. A lot of people here, come January 1st, they're going to kick off their New Year's resolutions. And the vast majority of those people that set New Year's resolutions will not follow through on them. Why? And in fact, like I said before, most people won't even set goals at all. If they do make a New Year's resolution, it'll last for about a week, maybe. And so we should look at this idea of setting goals. And why do people not do it? Well, they don't take the time, or they don't know how, or they don't believe in their own ability. They have too many interests and activities, so that they don't have any real focus or direction. And this is what I was getting at earlier with busyness. Everybody knows the guy or the gal. They see them. They're really busy, but they don't really get a whole lot done. It's like, how can you be so busy yet not accomplish hardly anything? So they don't have any focus or direction. Or maybe people don't set goals because they fear failure. Well, I'm here to tell you, setting goals is an important aspect of living your life. Like I said before, only 3% of adults set goals, and they are by and large, think of whatever metric you want as far as defining success, they're more successful. Okay, just by the act of setting a goal, reflecting on that goal, coming up with a plan to meet that goal, and actively working to meet that goal. Okay, so that's what we're going to get into today, is setting those goals. With what we're doing out here, we have a lot of major goals. Based on everything that we're trying to do, we have to set goals. Otherwise, we would have no focus, no direction. I guarantee you, we would be very busy, but we would be flailing. And so we do that. We have set all these goals in order to try and accomplish everything, especially based on the timelines that we have set in order to accomplish these major goals. So let's start with an example. I want to live a resilient and healthy lifestyle, and I want to pass that legacy onto my children. Okay, so that's a good vision statement. It's, you know, something that you want to achieve. It's basically something to look to as one of many, probably. But then you need to define, what does that look like? What does that mean? And so we determine major goals from that. And so I'm going to use that as an example, and I want to give you one of our major goals, and then walk through it so you can see the process that will hopefully help you to set goals. Okay, so here's a major goal that we took from something like that. All right, so by August 2016, to provide 80% of food from our property for our consumption and generate $3,000 to help run operations. Okay, when I say the $3,000, that I'm not talking about that as being a sole source of income. That's just really offset costs of running all those animals, raising that food, you know, plantings, aspects like that. So from that major goal, we need to determine some midterm goals, some short-term goals, and an action plan. But it would help us to kind of think through this a little bit, is to ask some questions and then ponder those questions. Hopefully you have someone you can sit down and talk with this about. But one of the really important questions to ask is, why is this goal so important to you? What's the significance of achieving this goal? Okay, so again, for us, by August 2016, we're getting 80% of food from our property, and we're generating some income, $3,000 in this case, to help offset those costs. Why is that important to us? What's the significance of that? Well, for us, we talked about this. We thought about it. There's many reasons. Food security in case times get tough, that we save money, we are healthier, we're building our immune systems by eating healthier food. We are able to live by our principles by rejecting the modern system of food production and animal production. Okay, so it allows us to live by our principles. So it's very significant to us. It's very important to us to achieve this. It's not just a novelty like, oh, hey, we grow all of our own food on our property. There's reasons behind it. And so it helps to think through those and write this stuff down. You've got to write it down. So we have our major goal, and then we have some of these ideas jotted down underneath it on why this is important, why it's significant, what you would gain by achieving it. So again, allowing us to live by our principles, it will feed my family, so and therefore save me money, because you know, we've got a lot of mouths to feed. Okay, there's eight of us out here now. It'll build our health. All these different aspects of why this goal is important. And then it also helps to list out obstacles. You know, what are some obstacles that will get in my way of achieving this goal? And the reason is not to just dwell on those things, the negative. It's to be able to overcome them. And that'll get, I mean, if you write this stuff down, when you determine your midterm and your short-term goals, they will reflect being able to overcome these obstacles. So we figured out some obstacles for us might be lack of knowledge, lack of experience, maybe limited funds, certain growing conditions or limited, our property being limited in certain ways, you know, are all obstacles. They might stop us from achieving this goal. Oh, and by the way, I need to go back just briefly as far as time frame for this major goal. It can be whatever you want. Okay, I recommend that it be at least a 2 to 3 year goal, if not a 5 year goal. All right, obviously we have this, ours is defined by time, August 2016, so, you know, it's almost 2 years. Okay, so I'd be saying about nearly 2 years being the minimum, all the way out to like 5 years. That's a good kind of left and right lateral limit for a major goal. So those are some of the obstacles. Like I said, lack of knowledge, lack of experience. Although we're overcoming those, and you'll see that in our midterm and our short-term goals, our action plan, our weekly rituals, all of these that work together to help us to be successful. And then here are some other questions. What risks are you taking by pursuing this goal? You know, it's not a fruitless question. It's important to think through that. Not that it'll stop you from doing it. Hopefully it doesn't stop you from pursuing your goals. But again, it helps you to think through the ideas behind it and the obstacles, and also, you know, mitigating that risk. You know, how can you, other ways to mitigate that risk? And again, you can do that through your midterm, your short term, your action plans, etc. And so that, you know, quite simply, it could be a waste of money, a waste of time and effort. We could fall short of that goal. I mean, that, you know, you have to think through it. So each goal is going to have different risks associated with it. And what that does is that leads us to this very important question. So we've set the major goal. We've laid it all out. We've talked through some of these questions and issues. And then we have this question, and this is super important. And it's why it's okay for your major goal to be a little bit vague, and they get more specific as you go down. All right, and that's this. What has to happen to consider this goal done and complete? So in other words, define success. Define meeting this objective. And for us, for this major goal, it was very simple, actually. But for some goals, for some of our goals that we have, this becomes an even more important question. Okay, for this goal specifically, it's pretty simple. And for us, the answer to this question of what defines success or what meets the criteria of this goal is that 80% of our caloric needs for the family are met from the property. In other words, it's grown, raised here. Now, I further broke that down into that's an average over any given week where we are at home. Okay, so in other words, on a particular day, maybe we're way below that 80% because we're in town or we bring home Papa Murphy's, whatever the case may be. But it's on average over a given week is that 80% of our needs, our caloric needs are met from what is grown on the property. Okay, and you might say, hey, why 80%? Well, realistically, that's a very difficult number to achieve, although it is achievable. It's hard to get there, and it's hard to get there that quickly. It's going to be very challenging, to be perfectly honest, by August 2016 to hit this target. I think we can, but it's going to require us to really focus in on these goals and really follow our midterm and our short-term goals and our action plan in order to do it. Okay, that's just a fact. It's not easy. Most people who have gardens, you know, they quote unquote grow their own food, don't even come close to this kind of a number. Okay, and that's why you'll see in our midterm and our short term how we plan on achieving this. Okay, but that's what the definition. This is how we define success. Also, making $3,000 in a year. So that's a little bit. That's easy to achieve. And again, this is by August 1st, 2016. So what we can do is for that second half of 2016, to achieve this, we would need to make $1,500. Now, how are we going to make money by growing and raising our own food? Well, we would sell the surplus, or we would offset other costs in some way, or barter or trade with the surplus. Okay. For example, one of our midterm goals is to obtain a dairy cow. Okay. Now, a dairy cow for a family of even eight produces, in most cases, way more milk than that family can use. In other words, to drink as milk, or even to with butter, yogurt, kefir, cottage cheese, whatever. Even then, we're probably not going to go through 3 gallons of milk a day. However, our dogs and cats love to drink milk. Our chickens, if we have them at that time, will love to drink milk. Our pigs will love to drink milk. There's lots of things you can do with it. But even so, maybe we sell some of it. Maybe we're selling, say, 15 or 20 gallons of raw milk a week. We just don't know. That's just one example of where we may generate some income. Okay. Now, with that, we are not, when we look at, say, $3,000, that's to offset the cost of running the property. Okay. Offsetting things like, the hay supplementation we'll need for the wintertime, for some of the feed requirements, for maybe vet bills, things like that. Now, we're working hard to make this a sustainable farm that is self-sustaining to the max extent possible. So in other words, we want our dairy cow and calf to be able to graze most or at least a good portion of the year off of our property and forage and browse. We want our pigs to be able to do the same, even though we'll have to supplement their feed. Same thing with the chickens. So, and then maybe raising some of the food for the animals also on our property. So there's lots of possibilities. And again, this $3,000 is designed to help offset those costs. Not may not even meet those costs, but it'll help offset. And then maybe, you know, as we evaluate at that time, if we're meeting this goal, maybe we set a new goal that's higher. And that would be excellent. Okay, so we have these, we have our major goal, and we have all these questions answered that help us determine our sub-goals or our midterm, our short-term goals. And so that brings us to our midterm goals. And for us, keeping in mind that major goal and that vision and all those questions that we just answered about why it's significant to us, and you know, and that helps keep us motivated. And then so midterm goals, how are we going to achieve that major goal? Now, again, a quick discussion on time frame. What we said is major goals is approximately 2 to 5 years, maybe a little less, maybe a little bit more, depending on, you know, what you're trying to achieve. Midterm goal, for us, what we defined is 12 months, or in this case, 2015. All right, so just over 12 months, because some of the stuff we're starting now. Now, it doesn't matter however you want to define your midterm goals. It could be a 6-month goal. It could be an 18-month goal, or even a 2-year goal, especially if you have, say, a major goal of 5 years. However you want to break it down, but it's just helpful to make it major goals, you know, midterm and short-term goals. This is a really helpful exercise for us. So what are our midterm goals with regards to this major goal? Obtain a dairy cow with production. I mentioned that before. So by within the next 12 months, or I should say in 2015, and we have this broken down all the way down to, you know, what month we were hoping to obtain the cow. But for right now, just the midterm goal is obtain the dairy cow with production. In other words, she's giving us milk. Okay, the second one is have at least 1 buck and 2 doe rabbits, with each one of those does producing at least 1 litter. Okay, so this is the beginnings of a rabbitry, which we want to incorporate into the farm. So having at least 1 buck, 2 does, each one of those producing at least 1 litter. Okay, so that's our 12-month 2015 goal. Obtain an egg mobile. Now, I said egg mobile. It could be an egg hen house. We're not 100% on how we want to run our layer flock. But either way, if it's even if it's an egg mobile that's stationary or fixed, it's still serving that same purpose. So we want to obtain one of those, and in actuality, I want to build it. And that's for our layer flock. So the main thing we'll get from those chickens are eggs. Now, if you've listened to me for any length of time, you'll know that there's a lot of other functions that chickens can provide, much more so than any single function. So in addition to eggs, they can sanitize pasture. They can help keep pest populations down. They can prep garden areas. I mean, we can use them in different ways as partners on the farm. The next one, obtain 2 chicken tractors. All right, so a chicken tractor, just it implies, again, movement. But the chicken tractor is generally speaking, made for your meat chickens. Okay, the eggmobile is made for the layers. You move the call it the hen house, the mobile hen house, around, and then they will either free range or paddock range around that. And so they have a lot more movement and the ability to forage. The chicken tractor is meant for the meat chickens. Now, we move that chicken tractor every day. And so it gets the chickens get fresh, basically a fresh spot of grass every day where they can forage and, you know, eat grass in addition to their feed. 2 of those. Next one, obtain 1 rabbit tractor. This is different from a rabbit hutch. A rabbit tractor, again, implies movement. And this is what often people will finish rabbits on. So our rabbit tree is to provide meat. And so you can finish rabbits on pasture. The difference between a rabbit tractor and a chicken tractor is that a rabbit tractor will have slats on the bottom to combat the rabbit's instinct to dig. Okay, but they do get the fresh grass, and again, you move that every day so they can forage. Another goal of obtaining a greenhouse or cold frames and or, of course, having the eggmobile implies that we obtain a flock of layers. In our case, we've determined that the approximate number is 20. And so when we get our layer flock, we want approximately 20 chickens. And so that's going to give us more than enough eggs that we need. But we have the ability to go through a lot of eggs. The next goal, midterm goal, is to raise at least 25 meat chickens. Okay, so again, implies that chicken tractor. And I'm talking about raising either from chicks or pullets through all the way through slaughter, butchering, into the table, at least 25. Okay. The next one is build at least one pond and one swale. Okay, and this is going to get into potentially aquaculture, the raising of productive trees on the swales, etc. All this ties into that major goal. And then our final midterm goal is to plant at least 30 productive trees, and that's in addition to the ones we've already planted. Okay, so these are the midterm goals. So, and again, we define that as in 2015, so approximately 12 months. And how you determine your midterm goals is up to you. You know, and each goal might be different. Each major goal might be a little bit different. It may be spread out a little bit longer or be a little shorter. That brings us to now we further break this down into short-term goals. And just, again, it's a little bit arbitrary, but we define short-term as in the next few months. So for us, that means through the end of March of 2015. That's what we're defining as short-term. Okay, so in other words, by the end of March, we want to have all of these goals met. And so this is really breaking down that midterm into sizable and achievable chunks. Okay, it's really thinking through the seasons. It's thinking through your budget, all of these in order to keep forward movement and keep momentum going. Because if we just sit here and think about the major goal, it may seem overwhelming. But if I'm just looking at my short-term goal, then it seems pretty doable. Okay, so here's our short-term goal. So by the end of March 2015, what we want to have in order to achieve this major goal that we talked about. And that's one, build a hen house. And again, whether it's mobile or not, we're still working that out. But it's to build that hen house for that layer flock. Build one chicken tractor. Remember, our midterm goal was two. In this period, we want to have one complete. Obtain rabbit, a buck, and a doe. Now, we already have one doe, so that would give us one buck and two does. Again, by the end of March. Build the rabbit tractor. And if you remember, the rabbit tractor is for the finishing of the litters. Okay? Obtain 20 chicks. So this is our laying flock. We've decided that we want to do this first layers from chicks to gain the experience from taking, instead of, you know, buying pullets, we want to go all the way from chicks. That's just what we've decided to do. And again, it's to build that knowledge and experience base. To breed each rabbit doe once. Thinning and creation of paddocks is the next goal, short-term goal. This is important because what you'll notice here is that we do not have, for example, obtained a dairy cow during this short-term goal period. Well, it's because we have too many things to do before we're ready for that. So the thinning and creation of paddocks. Paddock is just a defined area where you're moving animals from place to place. So if you think of a big square field, if it was broken down into four squares, that would be four paddocks. Okay, so the thinning and creation of paddocks. We have a pasture here, but it needs some thinning, and then we need to create extra paddocks. So what we're doing is taking and basically expanding the pasture. What we're doing is what we call silvopasture, which means we're combining trees and pasture. My goal is not to clear cut forest in order to make pasture, but it is to thin the forest and encourage browse to grow there in order to run animals through it. Okay, so I'm actually going to be combining pasture and trees, or pasture and forest. So that's how we plan on the creation of additional paddocks in addition to what we already have. Okay, the next one, obtain two pigs. So if you know pigs at all, and what we want is we want to start out with pasture raised pigs. So pigs that are used to foraging and working in pasture / forest area. So again, it'll be in these thinned paddocks. They do well in the forest, but you need to kind of have breeds that have been bred into a little bit more of a natural working ability. So we're going to start with that. Two piglets. It takes about 6 months to raise pigs to the table. And so that's what we plan on doing. So that for next year, we're going to gain that knowledge and experience base with pigs. And we're going to obtain them within this period. Okay, so by the end of March, we'll have two pigs if all goes well. The next goal is to plan an annual garden. So even though we put a lot of emphasis here on perennials, trees and bushes, and perennial vegetables, we still have a pretty sizable annual garden that we will plant each year. And our goal is to have a plan. So our short-term goal is to make the plan. And the next short-term goal period will involve planting that annual garden. And then the final short-term goal is to build that rabbit hutch. So again, this wasn't necessarily in order. That comes next. We're just listing these out. And this determines, you know, all your short-term goals. I should be able to go back to each one of these and go, okay, how does this feed into my major goal? So again, my major goal is that we're producing 80% of our own food and obtaining an income by August of 2016. Does breeding each doe once help me to that goal? Yeah, it does. Absolutely. It's giving me that experience. It's increasing the amount of calories we're now consuming from our property. So again, this is all measured out in stages. You know, so by the end of this period, by the end of my short-term goal period, we're still going to be very low on the amount of calories that we produce from our own property. That's just the truth. But we will have some. And you got to start somewhere. So right now we're getting very little from our own property. And so this will help get us there a little bit. But again, if I look at the major goal and I just, that's all I've got. Hey, I got this goal. I want to do this. That seems overwhelming. I'm probably going to quit. I'm probably going to give up on that. And that's why when people set these New Year's resolutions, these pie in the sky ideas, and they don't break it down into smaller goals, into the major goal and the midterm goal and the short-term goal, and then come up with an action plan, they usually quit. Okay, that's just the truth. So we want to avoid that. So the next thing now, after I go back and look and I go, yep, every single one of these feeds into my major goal, everything's looking good. The short-term goals feed into the midterm feed into the major, and even the short-term obviously would then feed into the major goal. Is you got to come up with an action plan. And an action plan is as simple as this. You break out a calendar, however you do calendars, if whether you do it electronically or you do it on a physical calendar, it doesn't matter. This is one way to do it. There's many ways to do it. You can list out, you can just get a pad of paper and list out all the tasks associated with everything that you just stated. And what I recommend is you only list them out all of your tasks for your short-term goals. That's it. Just your short-term goals. It's like, okay, now let me list out everything I need to do to achieve those short-term goals. I like doing it on a calendar. Just seems to work for us. It's, you know, it'd be different if this was a major project in a corporation where you're bringing in all kinds of different functional areas together. You know, maybe you'd have to do it a little bit differently. But this works for us. This works for a homestead where we're trying to meet this major goal. So what we did is we broke out a calendar and we just started plugging it in. Okay, we know what we're talking about from now all the way through the end of March. And we started plugging. We used an electronic calendar. And we just started listing out. Okay, let's take this next goal. Okay, let's just use building a rabbit hutch. Okay, I put that. We think about it and we go, okay, so what do we need to do in order to build a rabbit hutch? We need to come up with a plan. We need to obtain all the materials for that plan. And then we can start building. Okay, so not hard, but you still have to think it through and determine how you're going to do that. So in other words, I can't say, okay, let's start building the rabbit hutch tomorrow. I'm setting myself up for failure. I need to, okay, let's break out the counter. Let's look. All right, when do I have time? What do we have going on right now? You know, we've got certain, and I'll talk about this in a minute. We have certain weekly rituals. In other words, certain things that occur every week at the same time, same day. And in those, hopefully you have in a calendar, and that helps you create space on when you're going to accomplish certain things. Okay, otherwise you're probably just flailing about. So that's what we did. We decided, okay, we're going to call it, do the planning for the rabbit hutch on a certain day. So call it the 12th of December. Okay, and then I'm going to take the 15th through the 19th, and that's going to be my build week. Okay, not that it takes a week to build a rabbit hutch, but there's a lot of other things going on. But that's the goal. That's the action plan. It's to be complete with building the rabbit hutch by the 19th. Okay, so that assumes that I've got all the materials that has been put together, and that before that I had a plan that works, and that before that, and when doing that plan, I understand what I am trying to build. Okay, so for how many rabbits? I mean, if I'm building a rabbit tree, and I don't just have a single rabbit where I just have a single rabbit hutch, I need to have a plan. So how many different rabbit hutches do I need integrated into the system? Or am I going to use the colony method? Okay, there's different ways of running rabbits. So again, all that's mapped out. And I have it on the calendar to be for the build between the 15th and the 19th. I've got the plan for it. I've got the materials for it. I've got the budget for it. If it requires anything, hopefully, what I plan on doing is using a lot of materials from that I already have on hand. Scrap wood, milled wood that's not good for lumber, but be perfectly fine for a rabbit hutch. Okay, I've got neighbors who have scrap wood that they've said, hey, come over here anytime, help me, get rid of my pile. Okay, there's ways of doing these things without spending a lot of money. Okay, so that's one example of the action plan. And then after that, so I have because that kind of leads up to Christmas, what we decided is that we would not obtain a buck and a doe until after Christmas. Okay, because people have a tendency to raise their prices a little bit prior to Christmas, and the prices will drop a little bit after Christmas. So we can wait a little bit of time. I'm still going to meet my goal. I'm still going to be able to breed these does. But it's on the calendar, and there's a date associated with that, obtaining those. And it may require a little bit of research prior to that, but that's the, you know, it's going to be done by, that's the no later than date. I've also got on here, because something like, so let's take another example and how we apply it to an action plan. One of the short-term goals was the thinning and creation of paddocks. Okay, so the thinning and pruning of the forest in order to create paddocks. Well, that's a little bit fuzzier, that's a little bit vague, harder to define. And quite frankly, it's a lot of work. So that's not going to be something I can say, okay, I'm going to put it on the calendar for the 30th of December, and then I'll be done. No, it's going to take quite some time. And so what I did is like, okay, I'm going to put a recurring event on the calendar. I'm going to spend every Tuesday several hours, well, about 3 hours in the afternoon, because I know, looking at my plan, looking at our calendar, that that's an open period. Doesn't mean we don't have a lot of other stuff going on. We do, but you know, we got to make time. That's an open period, and I can get some of the kids, and they can help me, and we're going to do some thinning every Tuesday for 3 hours. And then we'll have to do an assessment, maybe in a month or month and a half, as we're getting closer to that end of March. We look at it and go, hey, how are we doing? Do I need to up this? Do I need to increase the days or the amount of hours that I'm spending thinning and creating paddocks? Okay, so, but again, I have addressed that short-term goal in my action plan. All right, I've addressed it, and it's actually become part of my weekly ritual, which are, again, are those fixed events. So that's an example. Another example, let's see. Then there's building the rabbit tractor. Okay, so again, all this is sequenced out properly as well. Okay, so we first thing we did is we built the hutch, the multi-hutch system that can handle a buck, two does, plus litters. And then the litters move from mama at some point. And then I have on here, so obtain the buck and the doe around the first week of January. Okay, that's kind of the week that we've decided, hey, we're really going to be searching hard and finding those rabbits. And then the last week of January, because we have some busy periods in between, we've laid out a week of building a rabbit tractor. Okay, so why have I done that? Well, one, because I couldn't do it earlier because of what we have going on. But also, even if I breed the two does in the first week of January, the reality is that even if they are successfully bred, their gestation cycle is about 30 days. And so that would bring them to the first week of February. And even then, they're not going to leave mama for a little bit. Okay, so they won't be needed. The rabbit tractor won't be needed until probably mid to late February. All right, so that's just an example of sequencing these things out. Now, I could go on and on through each short-term goal and show you how I applied it to the action plan. But just know that I did. And so, you know, whether that's through a defined day that this is going to be completed by, or it's a build week, or it's a recurring event that becomes part of your weekly ritual, whatever it is, as long as it's applied to that action plan. Here's one more very important piece of an action plan that I think is very extremely important. And this is really the kind of the glue that keeps you on track. And what we have is a weekly planning meeting. All right, so every Thursday at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, we get together and we go through a planning session. Now, again, we got together and we did all these goals and all of this planning. We have this planned out intensively. But you're inevitably going to need course corrections, rudder steers, adjustments that need to be made. And so what we've done is a weekly planning session that we set for every Thursday. And what the design for this is that it will keep you on track. So what we do is we get together on Thursday, and what we're looking at is the next week. All right, so we're not looking at the next day, hopefully. We're looking at the next week. Okay, we have a kind of an agenda, if you will. We go through a series of items, and I'll give you some examples of them. This is not all of them, but this is some of them. We add or edit calendar events. So again, we're looking forward to that next week. We look at we do this while pulling up the calendar or having the calendar up, and we look at, okay, we've got our weekly rituals. In other words, our weekly fixed events. Yep, they're still there. Has anything changed? Do we need to add anything for this week that wasn't already planned out? Did something pop up that we need to add? Do we need to edit something? It's like, hey, you know what? I'm realizing that my Tuesday afternoon thinning sessions for the forest aren't working. I'm going to need to move that to Tuesday morning or to Wednesday afternoon, whatever the case may be. This is where you fix those calendar events in order to stay organized. We then review the upcoming week's events. So there's nothing to add or change or delete. And then, so let's just review what we have. Okay, we've got our standard events that are occurring this week. We've got, whatever it is, picking up milk, et cetera, et cetera. Because we do a farm pickup for milk, for example, on Wednesdays. Then we'll go through like a status on everyone's tasks. All right, so if people, and not every single thing, like, hey, did you do your chores this morning? It's a status on any projects that are going on. So the projects that I'm working on, I'll give everyone else an update, and vice versa, all the way around. So everybody understands where everybody's at, if they need help or not, or if they're getting behind. You know, we hold each other accountable for that. This is where we resolve any scheduling conflicts. So there may be more than just, oh, we just need to add this to the calendar. It's like, well, yeah, we need to add that to the calendar, but now what do we do about the fact that we're double booked? And then so we'll resolve any conflicts like that. We'll also at this time come up with any lists. So it might be a shopping list, for example. It's like, hey, we do have to get certain brackets or certain screws or certain hardware in town on the next run. Okay, because we don't make a lot of runs. We really don't. So we can't just go, oh, hell, I'll just run back to the store real quick. We don't do that. Okay, so these are the type of things that I'm talking about. And then also a quick review of your short-term goals. So we just run through them real quick and kind of see where we are. So in addition to the seeing in real time or for that next week, the action plan, then we kind of get a little bit of the big picture. Not big picture. We don't go all the way back to our major goal and our midterm goals. We go back to those short-term goals, read through them real quick, and just go, okay, you know, a lot of times it's just motivation, like, hey, we're on track. We're making things happen. We're getting things done. And a lot of that is seeing the progress. When you see progress, you get motivated. When you get motivated, you sure want more progress, and you're going to continue to work on it. Okay, so that would be an example of the importance of a weekly planning meeting. And honestly, we have a lot going on here, so we really need this. And it works out well. It keeps everything in focus and on track. Okay, so that kind of covers everything up to the weekly ritual. And again, I've mentioned it a couple times, so I'll just be real quick on this. The weekly ritual is plugging in weekly events that are something that you're going to do all the time, a recurring activity. Think of it like that. And what I would recommend to you is to add in things like focused reading time. Okay, so whatever it may be. All right, so like we have our weekly rituals. It could be exercise. It could be your reading time. So whatever it is that you're focusing on reading, and which would tie into hopefully your personal development, that it would tie into that. So you know every morning maybe you wake up a little early and you get 30 minutes of reading in, okay, or you read the Bible and pray every morning at this time. You establish it, and that's just part of your ritual. That you the first thing you do when you get to the office, or you know whatever that may be, is that you sit down for 10 minutes and you do planning for the day. Okay, that's just reviewing your to-do list or creating your to-do list, depending on how you like to do it. Looking at that calendar events of the day or the next couple days, whatever it is that your ritual is that you would do. And then this ties in to your weekly ritual. And I like these. I have these on my calendar. Okay, so it helps keep me focused. Otherwise, I would probably be flailing and just kind of bouncing around with no real direction. Okay, and then, and like I said, the thing that you can do that really helps would be to establish a morning routine. Okay, so you have your weekly rituals. It's plugged in. You know that these are the your workout days. These are the, maybe your days are you can only muster 3 days a week to do your focused reading on, say, professional development. And you have an hour each period, but, you know, you sit down and you block off some time and to do that. That's fine. But establishing a morning routine really starts your day out well. So whatever that is, it may be getting up early, it may be reading the Bible, it may be working out. Whatever it is, establish a morning routine and stick to it. This really helps kick off your day because, you know, we are, as they say, creatures of habit. And when you build good habits, you start off your day productive, and then that carries through the rest of the day, which is a great thing. It really helps drive your focus for the day.
This concludes today's podcast. Thanks for listening. Please visit us on our website, thecourageouslifepodcast.com. We would appreciate any comments or questions that you have. And also like us on Facebook, The Courageous Life Podcast. Semper Fidelis and Soli Deo Gloria.